Today is May 5th, 2017. My name is Deborah Schwartz, and I am sitting here on behalf of the Mill Valley Public Library and the Mill Valley Historical Society to conduct an interview with
Matt Circle.
Matt Circle, a name I hear a lot. And I see you a lot too, Matt, on the mountain.
This is true.
You are
a park ranger for the Marin Municipal Water District on its Mount Tamalpais watershed.
But I've seen you far more times in other capacities as well, because you're a lecturer.
That's right. I'm a lecturer, a photographer, a bit of a naturalist, an outdoors person, a lover of the mountain, and a historian for the mountain.
Yes. I kind of think of you as the voice of the mountain. Any question I have about anything to do with Mount Tam seems to be you're the one I reach out to.
Well, I try to stay knowledgeable on what's going on in the mountain currently, what has gone on in the mountain in the past, and just try to have a general knowledge of the mountain that I can then share with others.
First of all, I'd like to say thank you very much for taking the time to include your story in our oral history program. I feel like I've been hunting my prey here. It's taken us how long? We started the talk about having an interview, and I believe it's how many months later?
Going on 14 or 15.
You're like a wildlife sighting. I finally got you right here and now. So thank you for taking this time, because I know you're really, really busy.
You're welcome. Glad we could finally make a time work.
Yes, yes. So first of all, I'd just love to get a little information, a little background information about you and your family. So if you could tell me just a little bit about your parents, if you know they're from the area or what brought them to the area and where you were raised, and just a little something about you.
Okay. Well, my family, at least on my father's side, has been in California since 1852. So long history here, pretty much based out of San Francisco. My mom's from New Jersey, but as the family stories go, one of my great-great grandfather, Alfred Perkins, was an early San Francisco photographer who took landscape photography and other early photography, and according to family stories, was also somebody who knew John Muir.
Hmm.
So sometimes I wonder, did my interest in photography, was it from my great-great-grandfather? And there's been a long family history, especially on my dad's side, of being on Mount Tam. My own grandfather used to tell me stories during the 1920s, which was the heyday of hiking on Mount Tam, of taking the ferry to Sausalito, catching the train to Mill Valley, and then hiking over the mountain. One of the most memorable hikes he told me about was he started in Mill Valley, hiked over the mountain, probably just guessing now down Cataract Trail to Alpine Dam, and then followed the Lagunitas Creek all the way to the town of Lagunitas. We caught the narrow gauge train back to Sausalito. So my family has a long history on Mount Tam, and I would love to be able to duplicate that hike, but can't completely duplicate that route anymore because Lagunitas Creek below Alpine Dam is now partly flooded with Kent Lake. I guess I could do Bolinas Ridge instead of Cataract Creek and Lagunitas Creek and still end up in the same place. And granted, there's no more narrow gauge train going from Lagunitas.
Yes, I guess you just have to use your thumb.
I'll have a car waiting for me.
Yes. Well, that's interesting, from the mid-1800s then. And where did, if you could include their names as well, do you know where they came from, where your that side of the family came from?
On my father's side, it's English, French, Portuguese, German, whole mixture. And then you're out of my mom's family. There's also some Italian on my dad's side. My mom's family was English, Irish, Slovakian, and Czech.
You're practically the world all in one man.
Or at least Europe.
Yes.
And
did they come in? Well, most people came in the 1850s for one reason.
We know they came to California for the gold rush because there's a building, I want to say it's in Murphy's or Angel Camp with one of my relatives' names on it.
Ah.
So they came for the gold rush, but they don't think they were miners because there was more money to be made from selling things to the miners than actually doing the mining.
As they say, mine the miners.
And I think that's what happened.
Uh-huh.
So.
And they came from where again, did you say?
England, probably Scotland.
But directly from before San Francisco.
Oh, before San Francisco. Some of my relatives actually came over on the Mayflower. We've traced it that far back. So my family in one form or another has been in this country before it was a country.
Mm-hmm.
So long family history there. And now I'm married to my wife, Heather Hill, who grew up in the East Bay and has been a park ranger like myself. And we currently live on the Mount Tamalpais watershed at Alpine Dam.
Mm-hmm. That's a nice place to live.
This winter was a bit challenging. Yeah. The road, Fairfax Bolinas Road, was closed for a long period. One morning I woke up to go to work, and going down the driveway, there was a landslide blocking our driveway bigger than our house. Like, yeah, I'm not going to be driving my truck to work today.
Well, it was a lot of rain this year.
And Alpine is one of the wettest spots in all of Marin. That's why the dam was built there in 1917 through 1919.
But where were you raised in Marin?
I was born in San Francisco and was raised in Kentfield and later Greenbrae, and graduated Redwood High School in 1989.
So just so we don't forget who you're descended from, your father and your mother's name is?
Tony Circle, and my mom was Patricia Farley.
Mm-hmm. So you went to Redwood High.
Yes.
Were you an outdoorsy fella all right from the get-go?
Well, I can remember Mount Tam going up there even in the 1970s as a small child. I remember in 1974 when they had the big snow on Mount Tam. We lived in Kenfield at the time on McAllister Avenue. And I remember that morning waking up and you looked outside. There was snow all over the mountain. And I remember taking drives up to the top of the mountain and along Ridgecrest Boulevard and hiking at Phoenix Lake. And hiking up around the East Peak. And later in high school, I did a lot of mountain biking, and that's where I really first started to extensively explore Mount Tam on my own with my mountain bike. And then also later started to hike around the mountain just to go to all the different places, and always had a history, fascination with history from the Mountain Railroad. And later I learned about the plane crashes, which I could talk about extensively.
I have paid to hear you talk about that extensively.
So
you're quite the authority about local plane crashes.
Yep, and that started with Mount Tam because I knew that they were there, but there wasn't much in the history books at the time or known about them except that they had occurred and the type of airplane it might have been, but even some of the history books got that wrong. So one thing led to another. I started to research those, but in the process I learned about a lot more. And just during the Second World War, there were over 60 plane crashes in Marin County. Just a fraction of those occurred on Mount Tam. I'm thinking there were 5 on Mount Tam during World War II.
Mm-hmm. Right. With the remnants, some of the remnants still remains on the mountain.
And now they're part of the mountain history and protected historic sites. And I remember also when there was a lot more. I started working for the Water District in the early 1990s as a seasonal employee while I was in college, working for the Rangers. And I remember one of the old-time Rangers up there was kind of my mentor, Gordon Hassler, showing me where the airplane wing was, and later we discovered somebody was trying to steal it, and we recovered it and brought it to the ranger station, only to have it stolen from the ranger station a few years later. And people might think that's a little odd, but people who restore vintage airplanes can either use parts or use something like a wing as a pattern to make more parts. A similar Corsair, which is the type of plane that crashed on Mount Tam, one was recovered from a swamp in the Carolinas, I believe, and just the wreckage of it sold for $500,000.
Oh my.
So when there's money involved, people will sometimes do things that they shouldn't be doing, and that often, when we talk about historic resources, ends up costing everyone that historic resource. Mm-hmm. I think John Muir said it, nothing marketable is safe. Mm-hmm. Yet at the same time, if you make parks marketable where people want to visit, that can actually help make them safe. And a lot of wisdom with John Muir. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned earlier, possible even family history of knowing him. And I've had a number of conversations with his great-great-grandson. Haven't met him personally yet, but when I first chatted with him, I mentioned, yeah, according to my family history, my great-great-grandfather knew your great-great-grandfather. So it's interesting how sometimes the world can be a small place like that.
Come full circle for a circle.
Exactly.
Before we get off too much into other things, I just wanted to ask you, at what point did you know that you wanted to dedicate your life to service on the mountain?
What's ironic is probably for a very long time, I remember, I think it was probably 1976 for Halloween when I was probably in first grade at Greenbrae School. I dressed as a park ranger for Halloween. My dad knew the then supervising ranger at Samuel P. Taylor, Lonnie Wagner, and he loaned us a state park hat and gave me a state park uniform shirt. So I think the seeds were planted early that I wanted to work on as a ranger and preferably on Mount Tam. So I'd say more than 40 years ago, I knew roughly what I wanted to do and eventually accomplished it.
How did you accomplish it? How did it go after high school? Did you?
After high school, I went to the University of Idaho's College of Forestry, where I majored in wildland recreation management. And I'd come home every summer and work seasonally for the Marin Municipal Water District. Started with the district in 1990 as a seasonal employee, and then in 91 got to start working on the mountain. And within a few days of working as basically a park aide for the water district on Mount Tam, I realized, okay, I now know for certain I want to be a ranger, and I want to be a ranger here. And I made that my goal then, and continued to work for the district first as a seasonal employee, basically the summers of 91, 92, and 93 as a park aide on Mount Tam for the water district. After graduating college in 94, I got, I guess you could call it a promotion to a temporary employee with the water district of the park ranger aide. And at the same time, I was going through the law enforcement ranger academy at Santa Rosa to get my law enforcement training. I'd already previously gotten my firefighting training a couple seasons earlier, 1992, by attending Marin County Fire Department's Wildland Fire Academy. And then when I was in college, I was also a volunteer firefighter for the Moscow Volunteer Fire Department in the city where University of Idaho was located. And during that process too, I became initially a first responder, now known as an EMR or emergency medical responder. And later, just after starting with the Water District as a park ranger in March of 1995, I got my EMT certificate, so I became an emergency medical technician for about a two-year period in the mid-90s, also a member of the Marin County Sheriff's Department search and rescue team, but trying to work full-time as a ranger on Mount Tam and then keeping up with the training for search and rescue was a difficult task, so I focused on my paid job, but it was still a good experience, and the search and rescue team still plays a vital role on Mount Tam, helping the different park agencies out when there's missing hikers or rescues to perform.
Yes. Yes, indeed. I know this for a fact because you were at the first responder to one of my friend's terrible bike accidents about a month and a half ago.
That's right. That was one of the more intense medical aid calls I was on, and sadly it did not have a good result at the end, but we provided the best care we could immediately. I mean, we were actually all coming back from a previous accident in an ambulance from Ross Valley Paramedic Authority, and which is staffed by Marin County Fire Department, and also firefighters from Ross Valley Fire Department came upon him, and I was right behind them. And
he'd had a bike accident
on Fairfax Blenis, Fairfax Blenis Road, and we had a helicopter already in the area, and he was airlifted, but due to the nature of the injuries, he did not survive.
Had he not been so severely injured, having such an amazingly quick response with transport to a trauma center could have made all the difference.
Exactly.
Yes.
That's true.
So on a personal note, I just want to profoundly thank you for being there. I know you love the mountain. A lot of the people that get injured on the mountain are there because they also love it. And I think it makes a huge difference to know that there are people that may be injured and perhaps not even able to speak for themselves or being cared for by people that truly understand why they're there.
And that's part of my job as a park ranger, is to provide that service.
So let me ask you now, what is the role of a water district? What is the role that the water district has in protecting the mountain? Tell me about your job.
Okay, well, first I have to kind of start with the history of the water district's involvement on Mount Tam and the public's desire to protect it. The idea of protecting Mount Tam as a public park predates the water district. William Kent was kind of the father of the idea of protecting Mount Tam as a park, and he formed the Tamalpais National Park Association in 1903, and at the time, all of Mount Tam, except for a little parcel at Cascade Falls in Mill Valley, was privately owned. Primarily, most of the slopes of Mount Tam and the peaks were owned by private water companies. You had the North Coast Water Company that was on the south side of Mount Tam, where railroad grade is now. And then on the north side of the mountain, you had what was originally called the Marin County Water Company and later became the Marin Water and Power Company that first built Lake Lagunitas in 1872 and later would build Phoenix Lake in around 1904. So going back to this idea of preserving Mount Tam, the initial segment of Mount Tam publicly preserved as public land was Muir Woods, which William Kent bought and then donated to the federal government to protect it from being dammed by one of the private water companies. And he donated it because the private water companies couldn't do condemnation proceedings on federal land. So he saved it and he suggested it to Teddy Roosevelt, who was the president at the time and his personal friend, that it be named in honor of John Muir. But that was only, at the time, less than 300 acres. So a very small parcel of land, considering Mount Tam region, you could estimate, covers about 40 to 50,000 acres of total land. William Kent, also being a progressive during the height of the progressive era, realized the private water companies in Marin weren't providing the best service, and so he helped with the idea of creating a municipal water district, and kind of through his guidance, the state of California enacted the Municipal Water District Act of 1911, which authorized the creation of municipal water districts. And in 1912, in April 1912, the voters of the proposed Marin Municipal Water District, which pretty at the time included the major towns and cities from San Rafael South, approved the creation of the Marin Municipal Water District. One of the major selling points was it would bring the Mount Tamalpais region into public ownership. And from the planning stages, it took a few more years. In 1915, the voters approved a bond measure allowing the construction of the Alpine Project, or Alpine Dam in Alpine Lake, and the purchase of the private water companies. At the time, two of the three private water companies did not allow public access and would actually arrest people for trespassing.
Do you remember which companies?
That was the Marin Water and Power Company and the Lagunitas Water Company. North Coast Water Company was more progressive and allowed public access, but one of the selling points of the bond measure was it would bring these lands into public ownership. And the water district envisioned the Mount Tamalpais watershed, or at the time they called it the Mount Tamalpais Public Park, like a national park in miniature.
Mm-hmm.
And the water district took over the lands officially in 1916, but didn't officially open them to the public until February 23rd, 1917, when the first set of rules and regulations were approved, because the lands were being set aside not just as a park, but primarily as a source of Marin County's drinking water, or the district's drinking water. They had to get approval of the rules and regulations from the State Board of Health to allow them to open it. And at the same time, the district also planned for how it would take care of those lands and how they would be policed. And that's when, at the same date, the Water District approved the creation of what they then called the patrolman job, which later was changed to park ranger when that job title became more common. Because at that point in 1916, 1917, the only agency using the dog title park ranger was the National Park Service, which was also established in 1916 partly under the guidance of William Kent. So it ties it all in. At the time, the state parks, their job title in that time period were originally guardians and then park wardens. So it took until considerable time for all the agencies to kind of agree on a job title and went with the park ranger title. At the time when the district established its park rangers, the job responsibilities was to enforce all the rules and regulations, patrol the mountain, fight the fires, and do other things like take care of the sanitary needs of the watershed and help manage the wild game. One of the job requirements at the time is the early rangers had to supply their own horse. So the basic job duties of the ranger has not really changed. It still focuses on protecting the watershed, enforcing the rules, patrolling the mountain, fighting the fires. One of my favorite sayings about what a ranger should do is, park rangers are protectors, explainers, hosts, caretakers, people who are expected to be knowledgeable, helpful, courteous, and professional. People who find you when you're lost, help you when you're hurt, rescue you when you're stuck, and enforce the law when you or others cannot abide by it. And to me, that pretty much sums up what a park ranger should be. And as a Water District park ranger, we do meet that. We're peace officers. We actually have the same training requirements as a city police officer or deputy sheriff. We are wildland firefighters. We're emergency medical technicians. were trained as search and rescue technicians. We're also expected to be environmental educators, so we wear a lot of different hats, and each is a very important aspect of the job, and you have to have the knowledge in all those areas to truly be effective in the job and understand when each of those tools should be used and how to use it.
So, in essence, when anyone passes a ranger with the ranger outfit on that is distinguishable from all other hikers, you're passing a highly specialized professional.
Correct.
Someone who is honed in all ways to handle any and many circumstances and topics.
On any given day, you don't know what is going to be thrown your direction that day. I mean, it could be a medical emergency. It could be a lost hiker. Just a couple of weeks ago, we had two lost hikers who had gotten off trail on Mount Tam, ended up in the Swede George drainage, which was one of the most remote sections of the mountain, off trail. And it took a couple hours to get to them, even though we knew where they were at, because they gave us their GPS coordinates. So we're no
maintain- they had cell service.
And cell service.
That's not always the case.
Exactly. It took us a couple hours to get to them because there were no maintained trails to where they were at. And at one point, we had a rescuer, one of our rangers, within 100 yards of them, but due to terrain and darkness, he could not safely get from where he was at to where they were at. And eventually, we actually also got the help from Marin County Search and Rescue, and they actually had to hike up the creek drainage from Alpine Lake to where these people were, and then it took about 2 hours to hike them out.
My goodness, how did they get in there?
Well, they ended up going off on a off trail. They were on the High Marsh Trail and took a wrong turn onto one of the unofficial trails that are not a maintained route.
Uh-huh.
And they eventually lost that, and they knew where they needed to get to, so they kind of started to follow the creek. And eventually the creek got a little too rugged, and they ended up on a ridge and realized that they were running out of daylight and called for help.
Were they on a wooded treed ridge or an open ridge?
It was a combination ridge. Where they realized they needed to call for help, they had hit a manzanita field that they couldn't get through. So they worked their way around it, and they ended up under heavy timber.
Okay.
So
the fact is that there's an awful lot of land, natural undisturbed territory, which in the conception of the Municipal Water District, that was designated, a lot of this was designated and protected as open space to be used for recreation and not to be developed. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, the land the district set aside was to supply the drinking water. And to this day, the highest priority for the water district lands is to protect the water quality and water production of the land. But when the water district took over the first large chunk of Mount Tam as public land in 1917, at that time, the district took ownership of 10,700 acres, including the three peaks of Mount Tam, and we were the first large piece of public land within the immediate Bay Area. At the time, you had Muir Woods, which was less than 300 acres. Down by Santa Cruz, you had Big Basin State Park, and the only other major parkland or protected area was MMWD's watershed lands on Mount Tam, which was also a major destination for recreational use. I mean, people have been using Mount Tam recreationally for well over 100 years, and you can get, if you know where to look, you can find the tourist map from 1898 that shows some of the same trails that people use today, such as Cataract Trail. But the first large piece, and pretty much still the crown jewel of public land in Marin, is owned by the Water District. And while the cornerstone of the foundation of land preservation in Marin was started with Muir Woods in 1907, the foundation of rest of land preservation started with the Water District in 1917. And if you were to actually look at a map, you could see how the public lands and protected areas in Marin grew around that initial 10,000 acres the Water District owned. 1928, you had Mount Tam State Park, and at the time it was much smaller than the current state park, primarily focusing on the Pantol and steep ravine areas. And once again, William Kent played a major role in that, in the Kent family. In the mid-40s, the Water District lands expanded significantly into the Kent Lake, or what's now the Kent Lake drainage. So the Lagunitas Creek Canyon below Alpine Dam all the way to, which at the same time was established, Samuel P. Taylor Park. You would then, Mount Tam State Park gradually expanded around what the Water District had opened up and preserved. And later in 62, you had Point Reyes National Seashore. In 1971, you had, or 72, you had GGNRA and the Marin County Open Space District. But if you took a time lapse of Marin County starting in 1900, where there was no public land, to today, you could see how everything was built around that 10,000 acres that the Water District preserved. And now, today, the Water District manages over 18,000 acres on Mount Tam, making it the single largest land management agency on Mount Tam. Put it in perspective, I believe the state park is around 6,000 acres, and then you have some land managed by the Golden Gate National Recreation Area, which now includes Muir Woods and Marin County Open Space District. But it's kind of an untold story, because when people think of Mount Tam, they don't normally think of the Water District. Some of the locals do, but when people see me, well, what's the Water District doing up here? Oh, you're a ranger on Mount Tam. Oh, do you work for the state park? And I have to explain to them that I work for the Water District, and we play an integral role, not only in today on Mount Tam, but for over 100 years, we've been actively involved in protecting Mount Tam for future generations and providing Marin County, or at least the residents of the Marin Municipal Water District, with their drinking water.
I don't think State Park or any other agency really has trucks that give water to thirsty hikers. When it's in the summer, this has actually happened, where a Water District truck comes by and they hand you a glass of water if you're thirsty. This is a very courteous and unexpected gesture.
And it's also a public safety thing, or preventative search and rescue, because summertime, when it gets hot, people often overestimate their abilities and underestimate what they need. And it's better to provide water to somebody before they need it than to wait for them to have possibly a medical emergency because of dehydration.
It's just a bit of a surprise, because nowhere in the world that I've hiked has you see a truck come along the ridge and out steps a fellow offering you water. Or a woman.
We've developed that over the past few years especially, but we learned that during the summertime, especially if you're coming from San Francisco and you're thinking it's going to be cool, mm-hmm. and you get on Mount Tam, especially above the inversion layer, it can get really, really hot, and people are often not prepared for what they're going to go out and do, because there's this perception, oh, it's so close to San Francisco, it's really not that wild of a place. And the fact that you can have people get lost off trail and it takes a couple hours to get to them gives you an idea of how rugged Mount Tam actually is and how wild it still is.
A very good point you're making. Because we're with just really, as a crow flies, just a few miles from San Francisco, people that come from the city to hike over here are often surprised by the wildlife. For example, we have mountain lions and fox and an abundance of deer and many other animals. And you people do die on these trails.
Luckily, not that often, but I mean, I've been to a number of cardiac arrests, and sometimes we're successful and sometimes we're not. I mean, and sadly, because it is such a beautiful place, Mount Tam is also a place where people sometimes go to end their lives. Mm-hmm. And I've been to a few of those cases. I mean, one of them also illustrates how rugged Mount Tam is. A few years back, I went to a call where somebody had driven off Ridgecrest Boulevard and driven their cars into the tree, so it was out of sight. They were only probably 100 yards or so off Ridgecrest Boulevard, but in an area where people pass all the time, and the car had been down there with the victim in it for 2 years
before
it was found, because there was an area where people normally don't go, and there were no trails, and this person didn't want to be found, so he purposely could steer his car through the trees to a place where, unless you actually went down there, you wouldn't find it. It was actually people who we suspect were illegally collecting mushrooms, mm-hmm. came across it. So sadly, Mount Tam can be a destination for people who want to end their lives, and they want to be in a beautiful place, and it's really tragic, but it happens.
Yes. Tell me about some of your most interesting rescues.
Probably the single most interesting rescue was in 2008. It was once again the Sweet George drainage of Mount Tam. We got a call late in the day of an injured hiker down on the trail. There were two hikers. It had taken the other hiker an hour and a half to hike out from where he was at to get cell phone service so he could call for help. And it took another hour and a half for the rescuers, or at least the first rescuers, to get to this hiker's location. It was on an unmaintained trail, or what we call non-system trail, down the middle fork of the Sweet George drainage on Mount Tam, which is one of the major creeks feeding Alpine Lake. From there, we ended up involving the entire ranger staff of, at the time, 8 people, plus 2 engine companies of 3 people each from the fire department, plus 20 members of the search and rescue team. And to carry this patient out in a wheeled litter down this drainage, because there were no maintained routes, took 7 hours.
And what was the injury?
Turns out she had a broken neck.
Oh, my.
She had fallen 50 feet off the trail, and there's a number of these non-system routes on Mount Tam, which we really don't encourage people to use because, one, they get people lost, like these hikers I previously have talked about. And then in this case, the hiker who had led her there was a very experienced hiker, but she wasn't, and she lost her footing.
Mm-hmm.
And so these trails pose a safety threat because people get lost and people get injured. And if you get lost or injured in these areas, as you're kind of seeing now, it can take a long time to get you out. And that was the single most interesting rescue. I mean, we get a lot of carryouts on Cataract Trail because people twist an ankle or even break a leg. We get a lot of mountain bike accidents, especially people going downhill. Went to one last weekend where the person was riding one of the berms on railroad grade, which we prefer people not to do. And according to the witness he was riding with, they were doing about 30 miles an hour, and he lost control of his bike and landed on his head.
Mm.
Luckily, he was not critically injured and treated his injuries, and the fire department transported him to the hospital. And I'm trying to think of, and then some of the rescues, people aren't injured, they just get lost. Sometimes they take wrong turns. This particular area is on the mountain where we have a long history. We refer to one area kind of in the Sweet George High Marsh area as the Bermuda Triangle, because people tend to get lost there. And of the Land Management Agency, we have tried to address that by putting in better signage and trying to hide the unofficial routes, but people continue to use the unofficial routes or uncover the work that we do to make them less obvious. So,
for those that may not know where Sweet George area is, why don't you explain?
It's an the Sweet George Creek is one of the major tributaries of Alpine Dam or Alpine Lake. The Sweet George Creeks start on the upper slopes of Mount Tam, crossing Northside Trail, then crossing High Marsh Trail, and they all converge prior to the Helen Mark Trail, where there's a fabulous bridge that was built by a longtime Water District employee and later State Park docent Jim Vitek, the Sweet George Bridge, which he built in the early 50s. It's one of the neatest bridges on the Mount Tam, and he built the trail and named it in honor of Helen Mark, who was the wife of then Water District Ranger Frank Mark, and they had earlier been the last lodge keepers at the old Summit House or Larson Lodge, which was located at Ridgecrest Boulevard and Blenis Ridge, Fairfax Blenis Road. But going back to the Sweet George Ranch, it's probably, at least on the main part of Mount Tam, probably one of the wildest and ruggedest sections of the mountain. And it has three major tributaries, the West Fork, Middle Fork, and East Fork. And people are going to be most familiar with it if they hike down Kent Trail below Hidden Lake. And at one point, you come within a few feet of it, and the whole way down that section of Kent Trail, you can hear the creek running. Mm-hmm. And that's the East Fork.
Mm-hmm. You talked about the history of plane wrecks. So there are some areas that most people can Google or maps will show where there's evidence of plane wrecks.
Yes, regrettably, in these days of internet and smartphone, it's hard to keep things hidden, which is in some ways good, some ways bad, but most of the plane crashes on Mount Tam occurred during the Second World War, just after. And with that, a lot of debris is still remaining at those sites. And one of the sites where off Old Railroad Grid at the top of Double Bonnot, there's the Vicon Trail, which also was known as the Old Plane Trail or the Airplane Trail, leads to near, or you actually cross the debris field on Vicon, of the single deadliest accident on Mount Tam, which occurred on November 30th, 1944, when a U.S. Navy PBM-5 Mariner, which was a seaplane patrol bomber on a flight to Hawaii, crashed into Mount Tam, killing all 8 crew members on board. And when visiting that site, you can still find boot heels and fragments of leather boots. And in reality, that's a grave site, because I've talked to the witnesses who were there soon afterwards, who were young kids at the time, and everyone went up to go see the plane crash. And vividly, I remember a conversation with one of these people that he was up there with his father, and they found a boot, and they looked in it, and the foot was still in the boot. Mm-hmm. So chances are the Navy didn't get all the human remains. And when visiting that particular site, treat it with the respect that you would treat a graveyard, mm-hmm. because 8 men died there. And the other site, there's the 2 Corsairs that crashed after a mid-air collision above Rock Spring just after the Second World War. And that a lot of that wreckage over the years has actually been stolen. I think I mentioned that earlier. Mm-hmm. But where I tell people to go is the engine from one of the planes is in Cataract Creek, mm-hmm. above Laurel Del Fire Road. And we don't encourage people to go off trail to go looking for the wreckage. We know people do, but mm-hmm. We ask people to protect all cultural history sites or historic sites on Mount Tam as historic. And if you do visit them, take pictures, but don't take anything else. I mean, Leave only footprints, take only pictures, because leave something behind for future generations to see.
Yesterday I was hiking in the Merritt Headlands over by Rodeo Beach, and I was up at Tennessee Point, and I noticed that there was some debris as you're looking out at the ocean to the left, right below the point, and I could not tell what it is. Now, I texted you, and you said...
Without actually seeing it myself, which now I'm really curious, there were a number of military installations along that section of coast, from observation posts for the coastal artillery down at Fort Cronkite and Fort Barry. There were also coastal search lights, giant spotlights mm-hmm. that they would probably multi-million candle power that they'd search for enemy ships offshore at night. And I know there was one near Tennessee Point because just prior to World War II, a pilot out of Hamilton Field was flying his P-40 off Tennessee Point. When one of those searchlights turned on him, it temporarily blinded him, they believe, and it caused him to crash into the surf, killing him just off Tennessee Beach.
Mm-hmm.
So, and those would be literally right on the cliff faces.
Mm-hmm.
So without actually seeing it myself, I'm going to assume it quite possibly could be the framework and parts of what was a coastal searchlight.
Mm-hmm. Interesting that that kind of material isn't removed.
Well, the military pretty much left all that behind. I mean, they took anything important that was easily to remove, but the coastline, basically from Point Reyes all the way down to the Half Moon Bay area, is crisscrossed with remnants of coastal fortifications and their facilities, primarily on observation posts, which mm-hmm. look like pillboxes, because
mm-hmm.
the coastal artillery could, especially the last generation of it with the 16-inch naval guns, could shoot a 2,000-pound shell beyond the Farallon Islands.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted to have observation posts all along the coast, mm-hmm. and with those observation posts, it was almost like how a fire lookout works. They'd take a bearing, the other observation posts would take a bearing, and then they'd triangulate the location of the enemy ship and then fire on that location. So the whole coast around San Francisco Bay is lined with these old military installations, and the closer you got to the Golden Gate, the more concentrated they became.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And now how about West Peak?
West Peak and still is the highest peak of Mount Tam, but it's currently not accessible because of the FAA radar installation, which originally was part of the Mill Valley Air Force Station, which was early warning radar that the Air Force built in the early stages of the Cold War on Mount Tam. They bulldozed the peak down, and for many years they thought the West Peak was now lower than the East Peak, which mm-hmm. is now considered the top of Mount Tam.
2,572, is that what it's?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And West Peak, they've only recently figured it's 2,000.
2,572, so it's more than
2,584.
Isn't that interesting? And so where the big golf ball is.
Is the still the highest peak of Mount Tam. And it's the highest, because you have the Ridgecrest Boulevard there. An interesting side note on that, you know, just after this, is the highest you can drive on Mount Tam. But the Water District is now looking at the restoration of the West Peak area to remove the remnants of the military base. Gary Yost, the filmmaker, is really one of the driving forces behind this. He did the film Invisible Peak, and it explains the history there. And he's, as I said, one of the driving forces who encouraged the restoration of West Peak in the Water District, along with its partners at OneTAM, or the Tamalpais Lands Collaborative, are currently putting together the restoration feasibility study. We'll have a a laundry list, basically, of the restoration options.
So when you're talking about the restoration, for those that don't know, although the barracks and many of the buildings that once occupied that part of West Peak are gone, the foundations, they shaved a good part of that mountain. How many feet was it? 30 feet or something?
At least.
Yes, right. 30 feet was shaved flat. And then you have the remnants of, and the foundations.
The foundations and a few remaining buildings, mm-hmm. the bowling alley, the boiler room, the sewage treatment plant. It was basically a small city of about almost 400 people mm-hmm. lived up there. And I know the Water District or Watershed Manager, Mike Swayze, is also a big backer of this restoration effort because it is kind of a scar on Mount Tam. So hopefully within my lifetime or even within my career, we'll see the restoration begin to restore that section of Mount Tam. The West Peak area itself, where a radar dome is, well, or the golf ball as everyone calls it, is still leased to the federal government, so that very top portion will probably not be restored for the foreseeable future, but as new technologies develop, who knows? Hopefully that radar will eventually be considered obsolete and no longer needed.
Well, it will. The publicity material, it says East Peak is the tallest peak on Mount Tam, be altered, I wonder.
Well, it should, because that is not accurate anymore, because they've have now determined West Peak is still higher. Going back to the one little side note, how Mount Tam's been a destination for recreation and tourism is the first road built up to the top of Mount Tam, Eldridge Grade, which was built in 1884, was basically a tourist wagon road, and it actually went to the West Peak because that was the highest peak. Mm-hmm. And later, after the railroad was built in 1896, it fell out of favor. And in the 1920s, the Ridgecrest Boulevard Company, which was a private company that built Ridgecrest Boulevard and later Pantole Road, as a toll tourist road, basically built West Ridgecrest Boulevard over the footprint of Eldridge Grade from near the West Peak to the saddle between East Peak and Middle Peak.
Mm-hmm. You are more than a rescue, a firefighter, all these things. You're a photographer.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. Because I know you spoke at our Mill Valley Historical Society First Wednesday about your book. What is it, 1 year on Mount Temple?
A Year on the Mountain.
A Year on the Mountain with all these exquisite photographs.
Well, being a ranger on Mount Tam, I realize I get to see some extraordinary things on a daily basis. And I probably 6-7 years ago started to dabble a little bit in photography, just, and I realized I should share what I see on a daily basis with other people. And photography is obviously the way to do that, because I get to see the different seasons on the mountain. I mean, I'm up there pretty much, or my work schedule, I'm on a 4-10 schedule, so I work 4 days a week, 10-hour shifts. But I'm up there. Now living up there, I'm up there every day, so I get to see extraordinary things that other people go to on their weekends, but I get to see it on a daily basis. And also getting to know the mountain, I get into the remote areas that many people don't get to see. And I've learned to appreciate not only the big landscape views, but sometimes even the small wildflowers, some which are easily overlooked, but if you know when and where to look for them, are actually quite spectacular. So my whole goal with photography was to share what I get to see with others.
This is probably a funny question, but do you have a favorite flower? Is there that one little beautiful creature that calls to you more than the others?
I don't have one single favorite. I have a couple.
Okay.
Calypso orchid, the spotted and striped coral root orchids, the giant stream orchids, the Indian pink, which is actually a brilliant red flower, and the tamalpais jewel flower and the tamalpais bristly jewel flower.
Okay, how about And I don't recall that many of, I don't think many of those are too scented. Do you have a favorite scented flower?
Calypso orchid.
Calypso orchid.
Yeah. They, very distinctive, pleasant scent.
So how about some of the other? Oh.
And I'd actually throw into that the ceanothus when it's in bloom.
Oh, or, the purple. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. So how about more odd and amazing things? I mean, there's so much natural phenomenon that takes place and even bizarre things with human beings. I'm on the mountain a lot myself. Things that I have seen that I don't think anybody would even believe. How about you?
Well, seeing the person walking their monitor lizard on a leash, that, that was entertaining.
Wait, monitored? What do you mean?
Monitor lizard.
It's oh, it's a very large.
4 foot long lizard.
So, on a leash? On yes. A leash. Okay. That is amazing. You
know, I've seen a few people packing in their cat in their pack and sometimes on a leash. That, and another guy, haven't seen him in a while. He used to, he had his parrot on his shoulder. Sometimes you get funny questions like, so I'm in full uniform right down to the Smokey Bear hat. Uh-huh. And people, are you a ranger? Is this your park? Oftentimes.
That's sweet.
And then getting questions like, oh, I think I mentioned earlier, what's the water district doing here? Are you here to fix the pipes? Just.
Keep going. These are great.
Just trying to think of some other good ones. I mean,
how about drunk guys in the night? I have encountered a few. I don't know if they had to take a cooling off walk or what, but
I haven't encountered too many drunks. So remember going to, was initially dispatched as a medical aid call back in there. I think it was in the late 90s. Got a little more complicated than that. When I roll up to where the patient is described, the guy's shirtless. And they always seem to be shirtless in a situation like this. Drunk. He's raising his hands. And as we start to talk to him, we decipher what actually happened. He and his buddy had been driving on Bolinas Road, both drunk. They got in a fist fight. One of them, then the guy, not the guy that we initially encountered, but the other guy pulled a gun on his friend and shot at him. Luckily, missing him, that they crashed their car and they both took off. And we never did find the gunman because he was probably hiding in the brush somewhere. But what started off as a simple, oh, it's a medical aid call, turned into this, like, okay, we got a guy who just shot at his friend. They crashed their car. They're drunk.
Where to begin when you're making your, and, writing your ticket?
And in this case, the one guy was shirtless, which, if you ever watch the TV show Cops, the drunk guys always seem to be shirtless.
I recall one amazing misty gray day when an 85-year-old woman ran past me on the trail barefooted in a bikini. She'd been swimming in one of the creeks.
Yeah, it's,
I would say a mountain sprite would be, or a mountain fairy would be an apt description of her. I've seen her several times.
Since. Well, I'm familiar with who you're talking about, and sometimes she's been seen with less than a bikini on.
Yeah.
And we get, especially during the summer months, a couple times in the summer, we'll get complaints.
Uh-huh.
And we'll have to go look for her, and we know who it is, but luckily, we don't, in some ways, don't catch her in the act.
Yes. I've also seen her dressed quite nicely, beautifully, and fashionably with sandals, pork pie hat, beautiful clothing, hiking in the most remote places, completely made up, dolled up. Anything is possible. She loves the mountain.
People do love the mountain, and some of the people who love the mountain can be a little strange.
Or we'll say
eccentric. Yes.
But okay. So how about animal sightings? How about animal encounters?
I've had seen two mountain lions, not too close. Actually, one ran in front of my truck and was gone like that. One was more on a distant hillside. Bobcats, the entertaining thing with bobcats is sometimes they'll just sit there and watch you as you watch them. And, like, you sit there, they sit there, and we just kind of stare at each other. Coyotes, see them pretty regularly. Going back to bobcats, I remember one time seeing at dusk, a bobcat chasing a rabbit.
Mm-hmm. Seen mountain lions doing that.
And one of the more memorable encounters, and it just like this is also a people encounter. There was a spotted owl, a northern spotted owl, sitting on a tree right above the trail, tree branch right above the trail. Very popular trail. And, I mean, 8 feet off the ground, just sitting there, plain as day. And I sat there and was watching it because I wish I had a camera. I wasn't into photography at the time, but I'm sitting there watching it. And literally a couple dozen people passed me. Not one of them, one asked, what are you doing? Or not one person even noticed the owl in the tree. They were so focused on what they were doing. Finally, somebody said, oh, what are you looking at, Ranger? And I pointed it out, and people... But it amazed me that here, good-sized owl, plain as day, just right above the trail, literally right above the trail, and a couple dozen people didn't notice it. And it's like, how can you not notice that?
Mm-hmm. Right. And deer, lots of dots of deer. Ever been charged by a deer?
Nope.
No?
I've had a turkey go after my truck before, though. A tom turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a tom turkey fight off a coyote that was trying to get to some hens.
Oh, my. That's a brave turkey.
Well, the tom turkeys, I mean, they can look pretty good. And a coyote, they mainly look for easy meals.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, well, that's not so easy.
Snakes. Now, lots and lots of snakes. Tell me about your snakes.
I mean, I see them just last week at my residence. I caught a garter snake that had obviously had recently eaten because it had this big bulge that you could tell was moving through it to get to its stomach.
Uh-huh.
It's like, okay, somebody just ate.
Uh-huh. How about rattlers?
See them from time to time. Most of them pretty small. They're actually a very photogenic snake, but actually saw one last... I'm trying to remember what trail I saw it on. High Marsh Trail, just in from Cataract Trail. Which, Cataract Trail in that area by High Marsh Trail, often see rattlesnakes in there, which surprises a lot of people. Right next to the trail, but I moved it off and it went on its way.
I've seen them on the way to Carson Falls, one, just the last year.
Yeah, you see them in the rocky areas a lot.
Mm-hmm. I kind of think of you as the voice of Mount Tamalpais, honestly. You spend so much time on the mountain. I'd like to ask you, do you think you've been changed as a person by the time you, because of the time you've spent so much time alone on the mountain?
I think I have. I mean, I've learned how to not only pay attention to the big landscape or the big picture, but also take the time to look for the small details.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the small wildflowers, unusual features on the ground, rocks, historic stuff. I mean, come across a historic cabin site and find glass from the 1860s. And you can't spend time on the mountain and not have it affect you. So spending the last 22 years up there working definitely has become part of who I am.
Do you see the world out off of the mountain differently because of your time on the mountain?
It makes me appreciate the mountain and the fact that we have this wild place right next door to civilization. Because a lot of places you do not have a place as wild as Mount Tam literally right next door to millions of people.
Do you What are the things that you wish you could do that you aren't able to do right now? I mean, in your perfect world, what would you like to see? And this doesn't have to do with the Municipal Water District. This is just you.
That's kind of a hard question. I mean, some of it would be people treat the mountain respectfully. Because, I mean, I can try to reach people, but understand that the impacts you have on the mountain and try to minimize those impacts from making sure you don't litter and leave your stuff behind and try to minimize your footprint, shall we say, on the mountain. And just learn to appreciate what it represents and take the time to pay attention to the details. And that's what you wish you could see more people pay attention to, not just, oh, their activity, but what's going on around them.
In other words, not just calibrate your heart rate as you're getting your workout, but to immerse into the natural environment. Yeah, and see the world around you. Is that what you're saying?
That sums it up, I think, pretty well, yes.
If you were actually an advocate, truly, you could be an advocate for the mountain. If you had the authority to speak for the mountain, and you know the mountain pretty well, you've been hanging out with this mountain for a long time, what do you think the mountain would say to us, to me, to everybody?
Treat me with respect. Help take care of this place. I provide you with recreation and the outdoors and drinking water. Help protect me so I can continue to provide you with these features.
And what does protect me? What are the actions people can do? Besides don't litter. Are there any other actions? Don't litter, you know, just...
Yeah. Don't take things off the mountain. I mean, don't take plants. Don't take historic items. Don't vandalize it. Leave some areas wild. Not every location needs a trail. Learn to appreciate the small things, because it's not just the big picture, the big landscape, as I've talked about several times. It's a lot of the small things too. Respect the fact that there's things that are on Mount Tam that occur nowhere else in the world, especially with plants, and understand how you're impacting the mountain and minimize those impacts. Try to leave no trace and just treat the mountain with respect.
I encountered a gentleman the other day when I was hiking. He was probably in his 80s, and he told me he was going to be hiking up a trail that was closed some years ago. And I asked him about doing that, and he said, I know we have to be very careful about the mountain, so I take off my shoes and I go up barefoot so I don't leave an impression on the trail, which I had to laugh. It was not a very smooth trail, let me say.
And that's kind of justifying something you shouldn't be doing.
Yes.
Oh, I know I shouldn't be doing this, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Yes, it's interesting. People have a way of sort of negotiating what they think is okay and what is not, is my point.
That's true.
So, and that is something I imagine that you face all the time. Like
quite
people
rigorous.
That throw orange rinds down and say it's natural, or cigarette butts. But speaking of cigarette butts, is it legal to smoke on Mount Tam?
No, it is not.
Where is it not legal to smoke on Mount Tam?
You cannot smoke anywhere on Water District lands. And
anything. Mm-hmm.
That doesn't stop people, of course.
Yes. I just thought we'd get that on tape.
But yeah, and these days, oh, marijuana's legal now, so we can... you can't smoke them out here. I don't care what you're smoking. You're not allowed to smoke up here.
For obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm. Well, by numbers, the most common litter I find on Mount Tam would be cigarette butts, followed by energy bar wrappers or gels. I'm trying to think of what are the, and then dog poop bags.
Yes.
Those are the four most common things of litter I see.
Okay, as we're getting closer to the end of, I'm going to ask two more questions, okay? First of all, do you have any, is there something we haven't spoken about that you wish you would like to speak about? Something that we haven't covered?
Well, Mount Tam has a unique history. I mean, from its history in shaping Marin County, it's the symbol of Marin County. It's a symbol of land preservation in Marin County. I mean, you have human history dating back to the first people, the Miwok, who evidently revered the mountain as being sacred, and they primarily lived in the valleys in their villages and used Mount Tam as a hunting ground. There were no permanent villages on Mount Tam itself. And you have the human history from there. You have the early explorers, I'm sure. The early Spanish explorers and Sir Francis Drake both saw Mount Tam. You have the rancho history of the Mexican land grants, followed by the American history, or once became part of the United States. You had the exploitation years of Mount Tam, where it was heavily logged and there was mining and extensive cattle grazing. But early on, it also became a source of water for the growing communities in Marin County, both the larger dams like Lake Lagunitas, which is actually now one of our smaller lakes, to the small diversionaries in the streams ringing Mount Tam. You have the tourist history, first with Eldridge Grader, the tourist road, and later the Mount Tam Railroad. You had the hunting history. At one time, Mount Tam had tule elk, grizzly bears, black bears, and they've all were hunted to extinction by hunters. You have the logging, as I've mentioned earlier. You had the railroads. You had the Mount Tamalpais in Muir Woods, the tourist railroad. You also had, going up where Kent Lake is now, a spur line off the old narrow gauge railroad that was built primarily to get cordwood so people would have firewood in San Francisco. And it's all intertwined. You had the road building history, Eldridge Grade, Fairfax Blenis Road, the Ridgecrest Boulevard. And some of it was built for transportation. Some of it was built for tourism. You have the land preservation history, starting with Muir Woods, and then the Water District, and then the State Park, and how that shaped the Marin County we all love and know today. And the history continued to evolve. I mean, we have fires used to be very frequent on Mount Tam, and actually fires needed for a healthy ecosystem on Mount Tam. But for the past 100 years, we've suppressed fire and allowed the fuels to build up, which has changed the landscape of Mount Tam. So it's just a rich, rich history of the plane crashes. You have settlers. And where you know to look, you could actually find remnants of this history.
In essence, what you're saying to me, and what I see you incorporate, what you embody, is a perspective, a broader perspective, with also an acute attention to the smaller things.
Correct.
That is what you live.
Yes.
Great. That's nice. Very, very interesting. Which is a good way, I think, for all of us to look at this. With the bigger picture, the broader picture, but with the appreciation for the smallest things.
There's something to be learned from that, yes.
Uh-huh. Okay, so here's my final request. A question, really. You've had thousands and thousands of experiences on Mount Tam, thousands of days. Can you end this interview with just a description of one of those great days, a moment, a time, maybe an ordinary day, maybe something special, but something that stands apart for you or lives within you that represents what it is you do and what it is you love?
That's a particularly hard question. One's popping into my mind. It was actually fairly recent, December of 2015. So even though we were still in drought, it had started raining early in December, and I remember hiking the entire length of the cataract, that trail that day, and it had not been a heavy rain, but it had been raining for like 24 hours or so, but it was never very heavy, and just hiking down cataract and seeing the sheer volume of the water coming down the creek, it took me by surprise, because I expect that when we have a big storm, but this was not by any means a big storm. But everything had already been saturated, and even though the rain was relatively light, just the sheer amount of water coming off the mountain and into Cataract Creek was breathtaking and surprising. And just seeing the waterfalls at a near peak was like, wow, this is impressive. Because, as I said, I didn't expect what I saw. I expected good waterfalls, but it was absolutely breathtaking. And luckily, had the right gear on, so I stayed comfortable and dry. But it was like, wow, I was not expecting this today.
So after all these years, I guess Mount Tam continues to surprise you.
Yes, it does. I mean, and another interesting one, and I'll close with this. It was back in 2011. I was hiking an unofficial trail that I had recently spotted. Never been on that particular route before. And I'm hiking along, and it's like, come up over this gentle rise into a flat area, and I find a lake. And it's like, am I by a hidden lake? No, I can't be. And checked my GPS, and it wasn't hidden lake. Found, it was about an acre in size, a pond, I guess you call it, a seasonal wetland, a pond, ephemeral pool, vernal pool, whatever you want to call it, that was not on any of our maps. And it's like, wow, here's something that pretty obvious, and obviously other people had been there, but to come across something that's not on any of our maps, and doing research through the Water District files, I could only find one reference to this area where it was called Pig Pond by one person, but it wasn't mapped. It was just mentioned that it was in this particular location, somewhat near Hidden Lake. It was still surprising to come across something so distinctive that wasn't really firmly on any official maps. It's like, wow.
All in a day's work, I guess.
The mountain continues to surprise.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Matt, for finally giving me these precious few hours and for taking such good care of all of us and particularly Mount Tamalpais. I look forward to seeing you on the trails.
Thank you. I'll see you up there.
That's it. All right.